married or they've just gotten married and they're looking for their first home. And a realtor has said, well, something just came on the market. And she says, let's go see it. And they're envisioning, you know, their life together. This is going to be their first home. This is where, you know, their children will be growing up. And the realtor pulls up and you get out. You're out in the country a bit. And there it is. What's her reaction? This will not do. You know, that's outrageous. You know, I can't raise my children in that home. And no, this is, I don't care how much it is. I don't care if it's free. So no. And they said, well, something else just came up on the market. It's in the old historic part of town. It's an older historical building, but it's a bit nicer. So, well, take us to see that. And so you see this and you think, yeah, now that's got some nice lines, probably got some really nice old woodwork inside. And yeah, I could see raising my children in that home. Can anybody tell us who the first picture who was born in that house? Yeah, it's you can go visit this in Kentucky. They're not 100% sure it's the cabin where he was born. It may be the neighbor's cabin that would have looked basically the same, but they think it may be the one he was born in. So that one produced Abraham Lincoln. The one above it is the childhood home of John Wilkes Booth, whose father also owned a separate vacation home or something somewhere else. Now, he was born in a bigger cabin, but when he was 13, they moved to that right there. Now, what's the point that I'm trying to get across with these two pictures here? It's not the house, it's the home. It's what the parents are doing with the child is much more important than the structure. And let's illustrate it like this. How many of you know, or this may be you, and if it's not you, somebody you know, how many people do you know of that as an adult have a lot of pain and anguish and difficulty in life because of the dysfunctional home that they were brought up in? Think about how many people you know that as adults, there's just deep scars and pains from the home that they grew up in. Second question, how many of you know adults who at age 40 are not able to function and just scarred up because of the house they grew up in? You know, it's like, well, you just don't know where I came from. There was like shag carpeting and the dryer was white and the washer was avocado green. It was horrible. No, that's not the problem in our society. So the crying need in our culture is not better houses, it's better homes. You can raise good children in a home like that, or you may live in a home like that, or you may live in a home like that. But what's going to matter is what's going on inside the home, the time spent with the children, and the environment that they are in. And I'm absolutely convinced that if there was a way to graph the quality of homes and houses, we would have today a lot of people living in houses that are much, 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 much more than they have to be, and homes that are much, 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 much less than they should be. Children are neglected. Children are exposed to all sorts of horrible things and damaged, and sometimes almost irreparably so, because of dysfunctional and ungodly homes that so many poor, innocent children are being brought up in today. But whichever of those you live in, you put a little sign in the yard, you know, soon to be burned. You know, 2 Peter 3 says all these things are going to be dissolved. whatever we live in, and there's nothing wrong with having a nice house. But whether it's our cars or our houses, they're not going to be here forever. You know what's eternal? The souls of our children. And so that's one of the things we want to think about at the very beginning. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 16 and 17, and Proverbs 17, verse 1. Let's read both of those. Better is a little with a fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fattened ox and hatred with it. Chapter 17, verse 1. Better is a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. Years ago, I had to apprehend a thief and called police and chase him down when he tried to run while I was on the phone and turn him over. But then I tried to help him. I was giving him a ride after his court hearing or something. And I was dropping him off at his house. And it was like brand new house, you know, nice subdivision. And here's this, you know, 15-year-old kid, and he as we pulled up, I think it was, he said, my stepfather just hates me. You know, and just thinking about the picture of what was going on there. You know, the plumbing was good, the electricity was good, the walls were good, the house was new, you know, the brick job was nice. But to grow up in a house like that. Now, by the way, there's some nice things about having a nice house. When you have a bigger house, you can entertain more people. You can bring people in. You can use that as a blessing in the work of the kingdom. But if instead of working in the kingdom and being there for our family, we're all the time working and not there with the children to know what's going on in their lives, then what you end up with later is a lot of lost souls and missed priorities. What children do need, children need love. Titus chapter 2, verse 4 says the older women are to train the younger women to love their children. Now, that largely comes naturally. There's several words for love in the New Testament, and one of them is storge, which is a familial love. And it shows up one time in the New Testament in the negative. It's in Romans chapter 1, that verse where it's describing the sins of the Gentiles, and my translation says, without natural affection. And in the Greek, that's astorge. You know, without storge. And every once in a while, you'll meet somebody like that. You know, sometimes I'll hear about a mom who just doesn't love her child. And that's just sad. But normally, what happens? Moms, dads, you know, when that first child was born, second child, third child, you just naturally have what? There's just this outpouring of love that you have for the child. So it's natural, and it should be there, but it can also be learned and increased, because what does it say? Older women train the younger women to love their husbands and love their children. It's something we can get better at, and we can learn how to do. And let's just say this real quick. One of the key things in love, and we'll talk about this on Sunday morning when we're talking to the young people, but young people often think of love as what you get. Think about John 3:16 in the word love. You know this verse. How does it go? For God so that he gave. Love involves giving. Love that's just what I get, what I get, what I get. How much is that really love? Love involves giving. And we need to give to our kids. We need to give time to our kids, attention to our kids, focus to our kids, security to our kids. There's so much we need to give to them. And they need time. They need time. Years ago, I heard about somebody had come up with an invention so that you could give the kid his supper, his bath, and his bedtime story all at the same time. It was a little floaty thing, and there would be a little place for some food and I guess a waterproof storybook. And you can just envision the busy parent who just doesn't have much time for their kids, but you know, you can get rid of all three of those things kind of at the same time. That's not quality time. For kids, quality time involves quantity of time. Deuteronomy chapter 6, the Israelites were told to teach their children when? When you rise up, when you lay down, when you walk in the way. It takes time. And Proverbs 13:24 talks about disciplining them diligently. It's going to take time to raise our kids, and we're going to talk more about that in just a minute. And they need training and instruction. So Proverbs 1:8, the son is told, listen to your father, listen to your mother. Chapter 13, verse 24 talks about disciplining them diligently. And Proverbs 22:6 talks about train up a child in the way that they should go. So they need love, they need time, they need training, and they need a godly home. They've always needed godly homes. But I tell you what, the world is getting more and more ungodly all the time. And our children are being exposed to more corruption and for more avenues of thought. And our homes need to be secure places. And we need to be aware of the attacks that are coming on our children. Whether it's from the internet, whether it's from pedophiles who are, there's just more of them than you'd like to believe. Whether it's from some of the agendas of some of the educational institutions, from the professor in New Mexico that said we need to get rid of the idea that children belong to their parents. And a recent governor who said after some criticism of a school board, including a father who was angry because his daughter had been raped in the bathroom by a boy pretending to be a girl, and then having, you know, people start threatening to call you domestic terrorists and different things, and a governor in that state basically saying that school boards shouldn't have to listen to parents about what to teach and different things. There's attacks coming on the home and against our children on all sorts of levels in many, many, many different ways. And what did Joshua say? Whatever you choose to do to the other Israelites, whether if you want to serve some other god, you know, you can serve those pagan gods or those pagan gods, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. They need godly homes. And if we are not being godly, and we are bringing ungodliness into the home, what a disaster we're setting up for our children. Because they're going to be tempted, and there's going to be things pulling at them. And if what they see at home is hypocrisy and worldliness, and put on a face to go to church, and then come home and act like the world, they'll see that. So, child training. Train up a child in the way he should go. We're going to focus here for a few minutes on time. Train up a child in the way he should go, even when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's what the Bible says. I believe this is a truism. It's what's generally so. A lot of the truisms in Proverbs doesn't mean you could never find an exception to it. For example, Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath. Grievous words stir up anger. How true is that? That is very, very true. Could you ever find an instance where a gentle answer did not turn away wrath? Yeah. Could you ever find an instance where, you know, a wrathful answer didn't produce more wrath? Yes. But it's what's generally so. This is the way things work. But years ago, there was a woman named Judith Harris that wrote a book, and it was Do Parents Really Matter? It was on the nature-nurture debate. And if you've had several kids, how many people in here have one child? Okay. How many people in here have more than one? If you've had more than one, have you noticed that they do come in wired a little differently? They're not all the same child. And so some people look at that and they think, well, it's their DNA, it's their genetics. Other people realize, no, it's the parenting. Well, it's some of both. And we'll talk more about that later. Each child personality needs training. We'll talk, I hope we have time to get to that. The parenting, it's what's critical. But they will have some different personalities. But she wrote a book, Do Parents Really Matter? And when it was reviewed in one of the news magazines, they said, her basic answer is no. Parents don't matter. And her position was basically this. Your child is going to be what your child is going to be due to two things only. Their DNA and their peers. And that's what's going to control what your child is like. What you want to teach them, what you expect, irrelevant. DNA and their peers. Now, she did say that since peers, there is something you can do, she said. And it was basically make enough money to have them in the best school district and then dress them well enough so that they will be accepted by the upper kids in that school district. Because she said, since peers is so important, that's what you want to do. And she suggested, you know, dress them in the latest styles and pay for, you know, orthodontics and plastic surgery if necessary. You know, because you want them to be accepted. That's what you can do as a parent. Well, fortunately, the review in the news magazine, you know, could see what a bad book it was and didn't report it favorably. But I got to thinking about it, and I believe in a lot of homes, it largely is genetics and their peers and the media and the internet. And very little from the parents. You know why? Because in a lot of homes, the parents are not involved. And they have abdicated the influencing rearing of their children to everybody else. I saw some statistics for one country that talked about the average time that the father spent with a child in a day, and it was like 15 minutes. What impact are you going to have on somebody in 15 minutes a day? So, let's think about this. Time issues. A garden. Some of you probably put in a garden this year. And we didn't. It was a busy year, and we didn't. So can anybody guess what our garden looks like this year? Yes, it's not a pretty thing. But if you've got a neighbor, if my neighbor has a really nice garden, and this is what he's getting in, you know, toward the end of the season, and I look over at my garden and it looks something like this, I shouldn't say, well, you're just lucky. You had good vegetables. Now, what can you tell that he did with his garden? He didn't just plant seed in spring and then wait and, you know, hope for a good harvest later. What did he do? Yes, he took care of it. If there was no rain, he made sure to water it. You know, if some rabbits were coming in and chewing it up, you know, he put up a little fence. He protected it from the dangers and supplied it with what he needed. And that's why he got that. Let's illustrate time also with animals. All right. Everybody's seen a cat and newborn kittens, and you've had robins build nests in your yard. I want you to think about the time that God gives you with your children and me with my children, and the time given to Mama Robin and Mama Cat. So let's start with the cat. First off, do kittens usually know who Daddy Cat is? It's a mama cat, but lots of times Daddy Cat is long gone. And how long do they need to be with Mama Cat? 10 to 12 weeks. Birds, how long does a robin stay there in the nest? Comes out of the egg, 2 weeks. About 2 weeks, they leave the nest fledged, and they usually stay with their parents for 2 or 3 weeks after that, and they're done. If you've had a newborn sometime recently, did you just like put them out on the street after a month? It's 5 weeks. You're ready to be on your own. No. Why can a bird do that, but we don't?
Grow up faster.
Yeah. And what does a bird need to know? He needs to know how to fly. He needs to know how to eat a worm. It's not a whole lot of social and moral things that a bird needs to learn. Human beings need to learn a lot. And God has given us years and years and years to use training our little ones. But we live in a society that ignores that. And we live in a society where there's a lot of people trying to pull parents away from their children. Deuteronomy 6, talk about things, you know, like when you rise up, when you lie down, when you're going in the way. In Ephesians chapter 6, could somebody turn to that passage and read it for us, please? Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. And notice there, that's fathers. We're going to notice later, especially the role of mothers, the critical role of mothers. But that doesn't mean that moms to do it all alone. This passage was addressed to fathers, bring up the children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And let's focus now on, I'm going to go past these and come up to one of the early principles of training in the word no. I've said this a number of times. I'm sure it's a bit of hyperbole, but I don't know that it's that much. When we get the following down, this principle about the word no, with a young child, about half of your work as parenting is already done. And I'm sure that's some overstatement, but I largely believe that. It doesn't mean that there won't be much, much, much more work to do. There will be. It doesn't mean there won't be challenges that you face after they hit adolescence and teenage years that you didn't hit before. There will be. But if you get this principle down when they're little bitty, you've laid the groundwork that's going to make these things easier. So early training and the word no. The importance of the word no. Go back in your mind to the Garden of Eden, and God has created Adam, and he has created Eve, and he gives them a rule. What's the rule? Yeah, so all of these trees you can eat of, except this one right here. This one, do not eat of it. Now at that point in time, how mature is Adam? Yeah, physically, if you look at him, I assume he looks like an adult. But how long has he been around? So he's kind of new to the scene. He doesn't have a lot of wisdom. He doesn't have yet a knowledge of good and evil. He is rather naive. And God gives him a rule, and it's a no-no. This tree right here, no-no. That's their rule. And of course, what do? They violate it. You look at Exodus 20. One time I had a fellow say that the Ten Commandments were the highest of God's laws. And that's not true. Because Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment was, and he quoted from Deuteronomy 6. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And he said the second greatest commandment is love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus said, all the other laws, including the Ten Commandments, all the other laws hang on these two things. Because if you love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, are you going to obey him? Yeah. And if you love your neighbor as yourself, as Paul says in Romans 13, you're not going to lie to him. You're not going to steal from him. You know, you're not going to sleep with his wife. You're not going to covet his things because you love him as yourself. It says if you'll do that, that'll cover these things. But coming out of Egypt, these were grown people, but they were not mature people. And we need some basic no's. And you get to especially the second half of the Ten Commandments and some in the first part, and they're all in the negative. No killing, no stealing, no adultery, no coveting. Don't do that. No bearing false witness. That's not enough to make us who we need to be. Because if you look at the parable of the Good Samaritan, you got the robbers who are actively evil. They'll steal. They don't mind if you die after they beat you up. Along come the priest and Levite. They never would have done those things. But what do they not do? Have compassion and care about the fellow and help him. So the no's are really important, but they're not the highest thing of all. And the Ten Commandments there were some no's. So to illustrate this like with children, suppose you're responsible to watch everybody's 2 and 3-year-olds, okay? And everybody else is gonna be gone for 3 hours and you're gonna watch all the 2s and 3-year-olds. And if I have you watch my, 3-year-old, I'm gonna tell you, treat him like you would your, and by the way, I'm not gonna turn my 3-year-old over to you if I don't trust you. I've heard people say, nobody can tell my child what to do except me. Nobody can discipline my, well then don't put other people in charge of your children. If I'm putting you in charge of my children, it's because I trust you. It's a dangerous world out there. I'm not gonna turn my children over to somebody I don't trust. But, that's what I'll say, if he needs a SWAT, give him a SWAT, do him like you would work yours. But you say, oh, no, we're not going to have any problems because I'm going to talk to them at the beginning about respecting each other. And so you give the 3-year-olds a little speech about self-respect. Yeah, how's that going to go? A little ways in, you're going to have to start getting with some specifics. No kicking, no hitting, no stealing the toys. Because they're not going to get the bigger concepts yet, right? You're going to have to get specific. And the Israelites need specifics, and we need some specifics too. Respect and compliance for a prohibitory no is just fundamental. And if you don't mean it, don't say it. If you do mean it, enforce it. The child that learns when mom says no, it means no, and he's not to do it. That's a well-trained child. And that's going to help him when he's 16. That's going to help him when he's 18. When at age 1 and 2, when dad says no or mom says no, you get them to respect that. And you've got the foundation that you need. Some people, want to childproof the house. One of the problems with childproofing the house is that you don't always leave the child in the house, and sometimes they're at grandma's house. And so when your 1.5 year old is somewhere else and they start to reach over at grandma's for something sharp or crystal or something else, and mom says, no, no. And the child puts their hand back down and they say, here, look at a book. And there's no disobedience. That's a well-trained child. You've already got the foundation that you need. I watched a mom one time, about a 13-year-old kid, and he's reaching for something. She goes, no, 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 don't get that. No, no, don't get it. Don't touch that. I said, no, do you hear me? I said, no, don't touch it. No, no, no. And he just ignores her and he gets it. And she turns around and says, I'm going to get him a hearing aid. There's a problem going on there, but it had nothing to do with his hearing. There's a big difference between hearing and respecting. What does Jesus say at the end of the Sermon on the Mount? If you hear my words and don't do them, you're like a foolish man building his house on the sand. We got to hear and do. So here's our basic vocabulary lesson. If when you tell your child no, they understand that that means no, you're doing a really good job. If when you tell your child no, they think that means tantrum time, then you need to work on that. Why do children throw tantrums? To get their way. Why do they think throwing a tantrum will get them their way? Yes, because it worked. So it's like, you remember the Somali pirates several years ago? I was really shocked when all of a sudden we had pirates again, you know, because that seemed like a 1600s thing. Pirates, really? Here's why they kept doing it. They would seize a ship, put a demand, and then some ship company or country would drop a bag of millions of dollars in a bag to them in the ocean, and then they'd let the ship go. They were rewarding misbehavior. When you misbehave and get what you want, what are you going to keep doing? Yeah, you're going to keep doing. If when your child hears no, they think that means the defense attorney may now cross-examine, then you need to work on that. If when you tell your child no, they think that means don't do it while mom and dad are watching, then you really need to work on that. If when you tell your child no, they understand, oh, it's no, you are doing a great job. Here's what that's going to do for them. It teaches them a respect for authority. It teaches them, I won't always get my way. I heard years ago on the radio, I think it was maybe a sports show, and this was way back when they had vinyl records, the event that the guy described. It was later, of course, that I heard it when vinyl records weren't around anymore, but he was describing this kid back then, and he said there was a party, and the kid went over and just took the needle and just, you know, across the vinyl record. And he walked around and said, no, don't do that. And then the mom stepped in. She said, oh, we have decided that our child will not be told no. And of course, later, he's like in Little League, he has to coach this kid. He's a terrible kid. And do you think that's going to be a happy kid? And making him think he's the center of the universe and he's never to be told no. How many other people in the universe are going to buy into that mom's idea? Is his future boss going to buy into that? You guys that own a company or something, you know, you're going to hire this guy? You know, no, don't do it that way. My mom said I'm not supposed to be told no. Are the state troopers going to be on board with this? Is anybody else going to be on board with this? So there's nothing wrong with children learning, I won't always get my way. By the way, that doesn't mean everything should be no. There should be a whole lot of yeses. Hey, Dad, can we play ball? Yes. hey, could we get some ice cream? Yes. Hey, can we, you know, could we have pizza later this week? Now, not all the time, but there should be a lot of fun. There should be a lot of joy. There should be a number of yeses, but there also need to be some no's. You know, it's saying no more than you need to doesn't make you a good parent. You know, Daddy, can I go play in the yard? No. Or Daddy, can I go play in the highway? No. Can I play in the street? No. Can I play in the yard? No. Can I play? No. Can I breathe in and out? No. You know, that's not good parenting. But when it needs to be no, no. They need to know they won't always get their way. They also need to learn that behavior is more important than desire. And I just see I'm misspelled important. Behavior is more important than desire. Is that important at age 1 and 2? Is that going to be important at age 16? They're also going to learn self-denial and self-control. So getting these principles down early, before they, our firstborn, her first spanking, was when there was a toilet paper roll and she was just, you know, running it like this. And Bertina said, you know, April, no, no. And she went. And then Bertina took her little hand and she went, you know, no, no. And April started crying, but she stopped doing it. Now, we didn't have a discussion about wastefulness of paper goods and stuff like that, but a child can learn what it means when a parent says no. And when you get that child to respect that found it. Have you seen brethren? Have you seen adult brethren that don't respect authority? That get upset when they don't get their way? That don't seem to have learned that behavior is more important than desire and have had trouble with self-control. Have you seen adults like that? Teach that early. It's an important foundation. Learning to submit to an earthly father prepares the child for submission to a far more important father. Every once in a while you might feel selfish. Well, maybe I should have said I would buy them that. You know, then we wouldn't throw it through. The child's not the one in control. You are. And don't feel selfish for teaching them to respect that no. It's a great gift that you can give them. Respect and compliance for the prohibitory no, and we're about to wind up here, but zero tolerance for the defiant and rebellious no. Because along with mama and daddy, one of the first words they learn is what? No. And so sometime they might decide to try it out. Pick up your toys. No. If they do that, they need to find out not ever to do that again. Now, they can say no when the answer's no. Would you like another piece of cake? No, thank you. I'm full. That's fine. But that defiant, rebellious no, don't tolerate that. Don't put up with that. Avoid upside-down homes. I'm going to save that for later because our time's up. So we'll stop right there. And thank you so much for your attention during this session.
We'll take about a 15-minute break. I sent out a link with the form. If